We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 250. Hey, look at that. 250, round number. What's up, Scott?
Nice little round number for entering the All-Star break. First half of the season is officially over. Not by numbers, but by everybody else's, you know, judgment. That's the All-Star break is the mid-season point, even though it really isn't.
Used to be. I hear John Sterling talk about that all the time. Actually, every single game, maybe every single inning. Well, it used to be 81 games and then the All-Star break, and now it's a week later. And he uses the word nominally a lot.
Well, yeah, because there's also, you know, other considerations. Like, the Yankees this year have the most wins going into an All-Star break for the New York Yankees history. But that's skewed because the timing of the All-Star game is different.
Right.
However, yeah. I heard them
winning
say
percentage.
The winning percentage is 13th best all-time.
That's not bad.
I'm hanging my hat on that one. There's some pretty damn good teams in the New York Yankees. It's pretty good.
I think everything is just skewed because the Red Sox have lost one game since they left Yankee Stadium on July 1st.
It's 1,000% all judged on the Yankees and the Red Sox at this point. That's the entire, when you're looking at the landscape and where we are as far as like in a situation and how you feel about this team, many people are looking at the fact that there are 4.5 games out of first place, and that's it. And unfortunately, if you're looking at that, you're not seeing the entire picture because the Red Sox have been freaking unbelievably on fire for the past 2 weeks.
And the Red Sox did this to start the season too, and then they came back down to earth a little bit, and then the Yankees went on their unbelievable hot streak.
Right.
So I'm banking on it's going to be cyclical once again, and the Yankees maybe will run off 12 out of 15 or something really exceptional, and the Red Sox might go 500 for a 15-game stretch, and then boom, they'll be meeting right back at the top once again. But I think fans are getting a little pissy because they on this road trip split with Baltimore, which sucks. We already talked about that. And then they split with Cleveland. They could have won three out of four against Cleveland, but Cleveland's a good team, and you swept them earlier in the season at home, and you split with them on the road. At the end, when you're looking at that, that is not bad against Cleveland, who's going to be a playoff team and has been a playoff team for the last two seasons.
Right, and they came in, you know, as a team that people thought there were some things you could exploit. The bullpen, the whole thing, you know, everybody was talking about the five, whatever ERA bullpen, worst in baseball.
Worst in baseball.
Didn't show like that.
Where was their garbage pen this week?
Didn't show like that, but you know, when you see that, you're like, oh, we'll tee off, no problem. Well, also, Trevor Bauer will throw 120 pitches, so it's not the easiest thing to get to the bullpen. And Kluber also will throw, you know, well over 100 pitches. So there's that also to consider. But they're just a different team. And, you know, when they come out and they beat you, you have to look at the fact that they are a very good team as well. So you can't go out there and expect to win or even to split every single series against a team like that who is a perennial playoff team and, you know, one that's managed probably better than a lot of teams in the bigs. Terry Francona still has a lot of my admiration as far as X's and O's for a manager. I think he's one of the better guys in the game.
The Cleveland pen threw 8 2/3 innings this weekend and only gave up 2 runs. And like we said it going into this series, that is not what was expected to happen. You thought if the Yankees could get deep into a game tied like they did on Sunday afternoon, it was going to be no problem win. And that's still without Andrew Miller, who when he comes back, maybe this Cleveland pen won't look too shabby. And they have Oli Perez, who I swear has been in baseball since 1985.
Yeah.
Having a pretty decent season.
I mean, he's kind of reinvented himself as the Mike Myers of the league now. You know, he's been on every single team, I think. He was at the Yankees. He was in Scranton for, you know, a cup of coffee this year. And, you know, he's been, I think, practically on every major league team. And now he's a lefty specialist. So, you know, good for him for completely coming back because he was a shattered player at one point when he was with the Mets. You know, he was done.
He had a lot. This is like his fourth resurgence in baseball.
Yeah, yeah. So good for him. He just keeps coming back, and a lot of guys cannot do that. So,
All right, we're going to get into all of that. But today, as you guys are listening, Monday is the last day to buy tickets for the July 22nd event, Sunday Night Baseball against the Mets this coming weekend. The pregame party is going to be at the Bronx Brewery. We're going to be there all afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. Last time we were playing cornhole, there was life-size Jenga. They had a DJ, a little bit of food. So it was a really fun atmosphere. Then we will head over to the stadium for the 8 p.m. Sunday Night Baseball game. Like I said, last day to get tickets is today.
Yep, go get them. If you haven't gotten them, make sure you get your crew. We're pretty close. We only have, I'd say, a handful of the tickets left. So get in there. What I'll do is if they are out by the time you guys see them, you will see sold out. So that will be the key distinguisher, whether you could get tickets or not. But if you haven't, then also start planning for the next one. The next one's going to be a lot of fun because it's the 1998 celebration game. That's where they come out and they roll out all the guys from 1998, and everybody gives them a standing ovation. There's a whole big ceremony before the game. So we'll actually start that one extra early. We did it for the 96 celebration at the dugout with the pregame being early, and it was we did a breakfast beers for 20 years. So that started, I think we started at what, like 10 a.m., 9:30?
10 a.m., because you got to get into the stadium early to see the ceremony that day.
Yeah, so all you degenerates, if you want to get there a little earlier, I think the bar might even open early. They may even open at 9:30, but it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock. But we'll be there as they open, I'm sure, because we fall into that category as well. So go onto the website. You can get your tickets now. They are up on the website. I know people have been asking, when's it going to be up? When's it going to be up? It's up. You can go get them and buy them now. So get your crew together.
Hey, quick question. Does Derek Jeter show up that day?
No. I don't think Jeter shows up until he's fully out of baseball. Or so it's just been long enough where he's just like, you know, I'll make an appearance.
Well, fully out of baseball, meaning no longer working with the Marlins, because yes, that might be never.
Well, it's going to be at some point. There's an exit strategy here. He's not walking into that without an exit strategy. He's trying to make his money back.
I would say the next time he comes to Yankee Stadium is after he is inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and then the Yankees will do something for him then as well for becoming a Hall of Famer. I think that's the next time and maybe the last time he will come to Yankee Stadium.
So you're saying it's only going to be for an event based around Jeter and not a team event. No longer is he part of the team.
Well, he's still always a part of the 98 team, but there's
no, I mean, like the team, like, you know, the celebration of the team, like one of the guys coming back, talking about it.
If he's not coming back for 98, that means he's not going to come back for 99, because, you know, they're going to do the same thing next year, and then they're going to do the same thing in 2020 for the 2000 championship, and then maybe he'll come back for 2029.
Maybe that's a long time away. It's a lot of things can happen between then now and then. But, you know, I don't expect him to come back much sooner. I think he's trying to stay out of the New York spotlight, especially after the Stanton trade. Actually, it might not be until Stanton is not a Yankee any longer. So he might be, waiting till the end of his contract before he can even show his face.
And then the last event that we're hosting this season is September 15th. That is a Saturday afternoon in September. That will be a playoff tune-up for the boys. And if people cannot get tickets to one of these events, how else can they buy tickets, Scott?
Well, it used to be that buying tickets were complicated and confusing, but now there's a better way, and you can buy them with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, the easiest way to get tickets to every single type of event, whether you're searching for your last-minute deal, planning a night out with your friends, or need to find that perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and that's fully guaranteed. There's nothing like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action. I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I use it. I've gotten Springsteen concert tickets. I've gotten some G-Love and Special Sauce tickets on there. There has been a lot of concerts that I've gone to that I've gotten them on SeatGeek. I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually use them to buy tickets for the last Springsteen concert that I was at. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare and find amazing deals. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every event, every type of event, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. That's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
Let's go back to last Thursday, Luis Severino against Corey Kluber, pitching matchup of the century. Two of the top five pitchers in baseball, pretty much no matter what category you're looking at. So, of course, it's going to be a 1-0 pitcher's duel, right? Yeah, not so much. That's 7-4 Yankees win, just like everyone expected, was a 7-4 win. And you could tell immediately with Severino, he was not on his game. And you thought Kluber was on his game, but he kind of blew up in the third inning as well. So both guys uncharacteristic.
Both guys uncharacteristic. I think he, Kluber showed something as well in that one. Kind of, he's done this before, where he'll let up runs, but he stays in the game and he you know keeps his team in the game for a long time. And Severino has done that multiple times as well. You could just tell on this given day that he was really laboring for through the start. And Kluber, after he got into some trouble, ended up settling down and finding some solid ground to stay on.
You could also tell Francona was pushing Kluber because he's afraid to go to his bullpen. We just talked about how his bullpen wasn't bad this weekend, but Thursday coming in, it was the worst bullpen in baseball. So Francona is saying, do I want to have Corey Kluber out there against the Yankees, or do I want to go to one of my bullpen guys with a 5.9 ERA?
Well, and not only that, but knowing that, you know, if you have to go to your bullpen early, you know, with it struggling at this point, then you know, you're in for a long series too. I mean, you got to really rely on your starting pitching at that point. And you don't want to be put in a jam. So, you know, we talked about that, how he will, you have to consider that with when you're looking at the worst bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. Well, you have to consider that Terry Francona will wait and can wait to get to that bullpen if he can get some length out of his guys, even if they're not having their best stuff.
And that's also one of the characteristics of an ace is when he's not on his A game, he still gives his team either a chance to win or length in a game that he's losing.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Seve battled through five, four earned runs. It definitely wasn't a great start for him, but those are his bad starts. And I can live with that if those are his bad starts that are, you know, every so often, not like once a month, if that, not even. I mean, he's so good normally that if we're looking at a guy who's giving up, four runs in five innings, a couple long balls he kind of got caught up with, you know, you take that because the majority of his starts are phenomenal.
This was by far his worst start since early in the season at Fenway Park in April, where he gave up five runs in five innings. And you could just tell he was giving up a lot of hard hit balls. Two key factors to why I saw Severino struggling, and everyone was talking about it. His velocity was a little bit down. His average fastball was 96.78 miles an hour, which you might be saying, well, let's round up. That's a 97 mile an hour fastball. You're telling me that's velocity down, but it was a full mile per hour lower than his normal fastball. And also, I think this is a bigger factor. It was mislocation. He was missing location with all of his pitches, especially his changeups. He left a couple of those up. And those got hit for extra base hits. He gave up two home runs and only struck out one guy. Yeah. So clearly not on his game.
Yeah, and I don't know how much I really buy into the fact that 97 or 96 is making too much of a difference. It's 1,000% the mislocations. You know, when you're missing your locations, whether it's 96 or 97 miles per hour, and you're either leaking balls over the plate or just giving too much of the plate to the batter, then you're going to get hurt. And they have a lot of guys on this team who can do damage. So you can't make mistakes. Like he could get away with a team that's not as good with Cleveland. They're going to make you pay for that. And guys like that, there we weren't even on the team last year, like Michael Brantley, who's having a ridiculous year now. He's been hurt for a while and now he's back fully healthy and they have another weapon now on that team. So that offense has definitely improved.
And that offense, oddly enough, is way better at home than they are on the road. Did you hear Leiter and Kay talking about this on the broadcast? Cleveland averages two more runs at home than they do on the road.
We're starting to see this as a trend around baseball, especially with the better teams. They're just playing better at home. I mean, it makes sense when you just know the park and you know the ins and outs of you know where you can go and what you can do. And I don't know. To me, it just makes a lot of sense when you see a team with good hitters that take advantage of something, a place they're going to be more often than anywhere else.
So you're not buying into any conspiracy theories. Maybe Cleveland's got some shady camera work going on. Maybe they're stealing the Red Sox Apple Watch plan.
No, I mean, that could absolutely be. Wasn't Trevor Bauer the one that was talking about cheating? Wasn't he the one that was bringing that up?
Trevor Bauer's, he's all about spin rates and pine tar and everything.
Whoever smelt it, dealt it. You know what I'm saying? It's like one of those, if you're on the lookout for that, chances are it's you're thinking about it. Maybe it was in your last meeting. I don't know.
Did you know this was a thing at Cleveland? Old Jacobs Field, now whatever it is, what is it, Progressive Field? I always think of it as Jacobs Field. But Leiter said that when he pitched there in the 90s, this was a thing that was talked about, where you better change up your signs because something shady's going on.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think I was aware of it at the time until they started talking about it again. But it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think in the early 90s, late 80s, that shit was happening all the time. I think a lot of that was happening.
Well, so Severino only got 7 swings and misses on 94 pitches. And I think it was clear. He was missing location, like we just said, maybe a little bit dip in velocity. He did not have the same bite on his slider. But the last time he got hit that hard was at Fenway Park. And after that game, there were rumors that he was tipping pitches. Now, there were no rumors that he's tipping pitches this time around. But all I'm saying is there is some innuendo here where maybe there's something shady going on in Cleveland. I think it was just Severino was not on his A game. But
well, I mean, if it's him tipping pitches too, and that was something that was before, I mean, it's quite possible that one, people are just using for an excuse when Severino's not great, and that's possible because it couldn't be him. He's not a human being. He's a robot. This guy's a cyborg who just comes in and dominates. So something must be happening. He can't have an off day. He can't just be not as good today. Or, you know, or he's, you know, tipping his pitches and they saw it in Boston. And I don't know. I think Terry Francona might know a few people in Boston. Maybe that's a little bit of a connection there. Maybe there's something that they know.
I love this. This is beautiful. We just figured it out. We cracked the code.
I actually just thought of that as I was saying it.
But you could also say maybe Kluber was tipping his pitches because the Yankees hit him around pretty good. Gardner had a 2-homer night. He always elevates his game in the big moments against the big pitchers. He tied that game off Kluber. There was a line shot down the line, barely got out, but it was a missile. He has 9 home runs this season. 6 of them have either given the Yankees the lead or tied the game. So he's been clutch this season with his home runs. And you could just tell as soon as that happened, like a switch flipped on in the Yankees offense and they started having better at-bats.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could tell that there was a confidence level against Kluber. I mean, they did get to him twice in the playoffs last year. And this, so it's not a guy that they're, I don't think they walk in and say, okay, it's Corey Kluber, one of the best pitchers in baseball. We're intimidated. You know, watch out. We're in for a tough, hard day. I think they have a level of confidence. I mean, yeah, they respect him in the sense that they know it's not going to be easy, but I think they have a lot of confidence in him with their at-bats. I mean, they've gotten to him before in big situations. So they know that they have that in their back pocket. They know that they've done this before. And I think when you have that belief, when you've done something before, I mean, it just gives you that much more confidence to say, okay, I can do it again. If I've already done it once, I can do it again. And maybe there's a little bit of doubt in Kluber's mind as well, because he knows that offense and the majority of the guys are the same, has gotten to him before and in big situations. So, you know, maybe there's some mind games happening here as well.
And Didi's one of those guys, another home run off Kluber. That has to be in Kluber's head, right?
Oh, after no doubt
two
about
homer
it.
Game in game 5 and now another one, new season. You know, there was some rumors that maybe Kluber was not fully healthy in the playoffs last year. That's why the Yankees tagged him around pretty good. But he seems fine now. He's having a fantastic season and Didi gets him again.
I mean, Didi loves hitting against Corey Kluber.
Loves
hitting in Cleveland. The guy's a machine in Cleveland and against Corey Kluber. So I love the fact that it continued because now it could just play into the next time they play as the narrative how Didi has, you know, he'll walk in with some confidence. Kluber will walk in with a little bit of a doubt when Didi gets up and we'll see who wins. I like it. I like it. It gives the edge to Didi, in my opinion.
I also want to talk about Tyler Wade, who came into that game late. And you remember the play he made running back over his shoulder?
It was a phenomenal play. It was super athletic. When you see the replay, too, and you could see how far he jumped and stretched, it was ridiculous.
Great play. But after or late in the game, I saw Gardner talking to him on the bench. They were just one-on-one talking, and it sort of got me thinking, because I remember I mentioned this on the podcast earlier in the season when Tyler Wade was struggling, that his game right now, Tyler Wade, he's a slappy left-handed hitter who's relying on his speed and his defense. That's what got him to the major leagues. That's what Brett Gardner was when he came up in 2008. And look at the evolution of Brett Gardner over the last 10 years. He's now a threat. He's a guy who can park a two-run shot off of Corey Kluber in the big moments. He's not a home run hitter, but he's got power. He's got on-base percentage. So maybe that's the path that Tyler Wade's career can go, is sort of evolving the way Brett Gardner evolved.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be, I think with Tyler Wade too, like physical development's going to be something, but he's still got that baby face, like young guy. It doesn't even seem
he looks 12 on the bench.
But I'm saying he doesn't look like he's gotten to that point where his, you know, he's he's got all his muscle, you know what I mean, where he's like fully developed as a man. Whereas Gardner, if you look at it like early on, he was like super skinny guy, and but you know, he's definitely a lot more built now, and he's able to control his body better. And I think when you get to that point, when you're on that like peak physical ability, and then you have the talent that they do, you know, it starts to click. And I mean, some say the majority of your talent is not completely brought out until you're like 26, 27, 28, 29, and you're at your peak physical condition at that point, peak strength. And then you can start really doing that. And I think Tyler Wade's a similar guy. And Gardner's talked about this, how Tyler Wade reminds him of himself, you know, with the type of player that he is. I think we have some more flexibility with Tyler Wade. Obviously, he plays the infield. And you know, he's hit all through the minor league. So it's not like they haven't seen him hit. And it's not like he's just a speed guy who has a good glove. He can hit, and they've seen it. And this time up, seems like a different guy. It definitely seems like he's a lot more confident, and is rolling off of you know, building just that confidence and rolling off of it. First career home run, it's awesome.
So you're saying Tyler Wade's not a man yet? Maybe we can just get him a quick bar mitzvah.
It was getting, week, yeah,
during
it was,
the All-Star break, turn him into a man.
Yeah, I was really.
I know he's not Jewish, but whatever.
I was really choking on that one. I didn't know how to describe it. But, you know, it's like getting to your peak physical condition. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's still got more. They talk about this in the NFL a lot, you know, or the NBA, where guys just come in too skinny and they got to put muscle on. I think Tyler Wade actually is that kind of guy. I think he needs to, you know, he needs to lift. Do you even lift, bro? Like, the kid needs to get in the weight room a little bit.
Well, Neil Walker's still playing. Not every day. I mean, Tyler Wade got a couple starts over the weekend, but Walker's still there. And I don't know when Gleyber Torres comes back. People are hoping Neil Walker gets let go, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't think anybody knows it's going to happen. I think we expected it to happen a while ago, and it didn't happen. And now he's actually playing a little bit better. He's been hitting the ball definitely better than he had been in quite some time. He hit a home run off of Trevor Bauer today, which not many people have done this year. I think, what, 6 home runs, something like that, that he's given up all year long, and Neil Walker is one of them now. So, you know, you look at that stuff and you see that he's starting to square the ball up a little bit more. He does have that flexibility. I could see them. It's one of those things, like, you look at him and you've been dealing with him for a while and he hasn't been hitting. But at the same time, you're looking at what you thought you had with him and you were good with that, because we were good with what we thought we had with him, and it just didn't work out. But
what do you mean by that?
By the bat, like, if he actually starts to hit, he could be an asset for this team.
Oh, you mean what Neil Walker was, say, his career before coming to the Yankees?
Yes, what we thought we were getting with Neil Walker and what we actually got in the first half. Well, you look over the last week and a half and he's starting to hit the ball more. So if he starts hitting the ball more and the Yankees see that, and he becomes that guy, well, you know, I think a lot of people's tune will change, because he will become an asset if he starts swinging the bat.
I mean, absolutely. He's a career 778 OPS guy coming into this year, and he's currently has a 548 OPS.
So that's the thing.
Dramatic difference.
But what I think he's done this past week and a half, has definitely bought himself some more time.
Every time we think the last straw has broken for Neil Walker, he does something that keeps him around.
Yeah, and he's been hitting, and that's they will send Tyler Wade back down to get more work.
Well, obviously,
there's no doubt about it. So I think when we're coming up, when Torres is back, it's going to be Neil Walker, at least in the short term. They're not in a huge rush, because they also, all those things, all those tools that you said that the Yankees can use for Tyler Wade, you know, they could absolutely use them in September after he is, you know, working on them and getting better, playing every day in Scranton. So you got to look at both sides of that. I think there's actually some pros having him continue to develop, you know, as long as they don't have a glaring need for a utility guy.
And last episode, we kind of neglected to mention, because we were talking about the utility guy and where's Ronald Torres. Well, he's actually on family leave. He was having, I think his wife is having some medical issues, which is probably the whole reason in the first place that they went to Tyler Wade and not Ronald Torres.
Yeah, most likely. And that's exactly the situation. So hopefully, you know, I haven't seen what the deal was in the past couple of day or two, but hopefully things are working out okay with Toe.
Right. So the Yankees defense Saturday night was kind of ugly. It did not cost them the game, however. We experienced the full roller coaster of Miguel Andujar in that sixth inning, when he saved the game with that nice backhand play down the line, and then coughed up the game with the way he played that very next ground ball with CeCe on the mound.
Oh, I mean, I was live tweeting, and I was tweeting for Bronx Pinstripes at that time, and threw up the Andujar with the, you know, with the finger over the mouth after he made the great play. And I think before I could even hit send, he botched the second play. And it was, you know, when we're looking at the two plays, he made a phenomenal play on the first one. It was really a great play, the way that he was able to range and then make the throw. And the second ball just ate him up. It just he started up on it and then kind of second guessed himself and tried to back up on it. He fielded it, but it was too late at that point. Even if that throw was on the money, runner was going to be safe, it looked like. So it was
right. Eat
it was
the
unfortunate.
Ball. Eat the ball, one run scores, and you live to see another day with the lead intact.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. But you know, in that moment when you're trying to make the decision on to either back up or move forward on the ball, and you actually field the ball, it's almost too hard to make that judgment to not throw it. Because if it was a strong throw, if he wasn't like on his back heels like he was because he had to back up on the ball, he probably would have gotten the runner. So I don't know. In the moment, it's tough to say to put that ball in your pocket, because I still think he thought he had an opportunity to get the runner.
How many people tweeted you about Manny Machado immediately after that happened? Because I had about 50 mentions saying, oh, the Yankees don't need Manny Machado, right?
Yeah,
after that Andujar play. And just comparing the defense, I know people are down on Machado's defense at shortstop, which he is a below average shortstop this year, but he's not a below average third baseman. So just quick comparison, Andujar this year at third, minus 12 defensive runs saved and minus 22 UZR over 150 game span, whereas Machado last year at third base was plus 6 defensive runs saved and plus 2.3 UZR. So certainly, if the Yankees could just exchange Andujar for Machado at third base, you do upgrade the defense.
I mean, the whole thing with Machado, this whole thing has been driving me crazy. So I'm kind of glad it's slowly coming to an end now. And as we're recording this on Sunday, he still hasn't moved. So that's where we are. But the reports
he's also
are,
not going to move, obviously, now before the All-Star game, because the Orioles need somebody in the All-Star game.
That's true. but, you know, it's not like that we don't want Manny Machado on the team to help the team. Like, yes, he could help the team. There's no doubt. The problem is all the situations around him, the contract, the fact that you're going to have to give up significant pieces to get him for, you know, less than half of a year. There's just all these things around him are the reasons why that, you know, does he upgrade the team? I mean, you'd be ridiculous to say that he doesn't upgrade the team. Of course he upgrades the team. It's the matter of fact and how you're getting him is the purpose of the pushback on Manny Machado.
I don't think we need to explain our stance. I think people understood.
It just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. I mean, it's taken over every social media platform.
It's been insufferable,
you know, for the past week and a half, 2 weeks.
The last week has been the most insufferable week on Yankee social media since we've been doing this podcast. And it's because everyone's minds are just exploding with the possibility of Manny Machado. And I don't want to say that it's all Yankees fans, but there's a certain set of Yankee fans out there who treat the roster like it's MLB The Show. And you can just move players around and create a player, jack this guy's power up, and you have an all-star at every position. That's just not reality. You do not need to have a top three player at every single one of your freaking positions. You have to build a team. You have to build for the future while building for the present. And I understand Manny Machado is only 26 years old, and he is much better than Miguel Andujar. He's much better than 99% of the players in baseball. But again, it is not what this team needs right now. And I don't think mortgaging something for the future, because you're going to have to give something up, like you just said, makes any sense. But hey, all-star, why wouldn't you want an all-star on your team? Just trade him. Just move the pieces around.
Yeah. I mean, they won a World Series with Charlie Hayes playing third base. Scott Brosius, while he was a much better player with the Yankees than he was in his former life with Oakland, and you know, he wasn't the Manny Machado world. Like, he was still a role player. The guy hit for average, but he was a role player. You need those types of guys. You don't need to have a superstar stud at third base, especially with the makeup of the current roster, to win a World Series. I'm sorry, you just don't. What
well,
you
also,
do need,
Duhar's not a scrub either.
No, I know. What you do need is pitching. And it's not just all top flight pitching, but you also need depth. You need pitchers to actually throw. I was having this debate with somebody on our Bronx Pinstripes chat about you know, what guys we need to acquire. And I understand that we all want the best possible pitcher, and getting a number one or number two would be ideal, no doubt about it. But when we're looking at who's available, we're just not seeing those guys that are truly obtainable. At least that's what it seems like right now. The guys that we're looking at, I know we have a mailbag question, so we'll get to this and talk about more. But you need those guys. You need. I mean, look what they did last year. Jaime Garcia came over to what? To make them a better World Series contender?
He was a warm body to just save some bullets out of the bullpen in the second half.
But that's the point. Those guys are going to be so needed. I think people are really overlooking the fact that this team is going to need those bodies maybe more than last year at the end of this season, because they're already breaking down as a starting rotation. They're going to get a guy with your, I mean, that's what we all think. But as the season's going on, you know, arms get tired, bodies get tired. 38-year-old men get tired. Trust me, they do. CeCe's going to probably, have to take some innings off. Who knows with Tanaka? There's going to need guys who can get innings. And, you know, if we're not looking at those guys at the trade deadline as well, I think it would be a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Cashman is looking at those guys.
I mean, look what happened Friday night with Herman, who was coming off a fantastic outing, and exactly. He goes out there and gets shelled in the first two innings and really doesn't give the Yankees much of a chance, even though they almost came back. They kept fighting back, but it was too much of a hole against too good of a team too early.
But that's the thing. Like, the argument, so the argument for a lot of people, I think, when we're looking at free agency and who they're looking at, oh, well, he's not going to start a playoff game. Who's he going to start in front of in a playoff game? That's not the point. The point is that you need guys to throw innings also. You need more pitchers in the starting rotation for them to actually get to the playoffs.
They're going to get to the playoffs. But
I'm sorry, but you want to win the division. You also need, especially knowing with this wild card, the different situations, still need guys. And if injuries can happen, and then you're put in a situation where you have to go off the street and get some guy who hasn't pitched before, or someone who, you know, is, you have cash considerations, or all those late trades that happen, like, those aren't the guys that we're going to want. You might as well, take care of the depth now when you can actually, like, go out and try to find somebody that's, has some upside.
And crazy as it is to say, one of those depth rotation guys might help this team out more than Manny Machado would in the second half.
I mean, definitely. I can't say 1,000%, but when you're looking, we talked about this last week, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, but the difference is, like, if you're looking at Machado and how he's going to help the year, well, take away all of Andujar's stats, subtract them for what we would be getting from Machado too, and then look at the difference of the two. Like, it will be better. I have no doubt about that. It will be better, but how much better?
I had this conversation with someone on Twitter. It's probably two wins in the first half if you're going by WAR.
Okay, two wins.
So maybe two and a half.
That's not
going to
be. That's probably not going to be the wild card. Maybe that's could be the division. Who knows? But right now they're four games back. So
yeah, it's crazy. Machado sources now the new update as of Sunday evening. Sources are saying the Phillies, Brewers, and Dodgers are the closest to acquiring him. The Yankees are not as much of a player. We'll see. I'm not ruling out that the Yankees could get him because Brian Cashman is sneaky like that. But when this is all said and done and Manny Machado is wearing Dodger blue, I think we might look back at this and say,
duh,
Brian Cashman probably did make a call to the Orioles because that's what he does. He does his due diligence. And then someone floated it out there just to stir the shit pot.
1,000%. This has been, I guarantee, stirred up by someone in the Baltimore system trying to raise the ante so that they can see who, the actual final offer is from the Phillies and the Dodgers, who the Dodgers need him, like a perfect fit over there. Prospects up the every orifice you could possibly think of in LA. And it makes so much sense for him to be out there. I really personally don't think that the Yankees were major players or are major players for Machado because it just doesn't make sense for this team. On paper, it just doesn't. I'm kind of questioning the Phillies too, honestly.
Well, what'd you think of Tanaka today? Second start back off the disabled list.
I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was, again, I'm not going to get out of my shoes with him, but it's good to see him make progress. Because I think it was progress. I think that we saw him a lot more efficient. He made a bad, I wouldn't even call it a terrible pitch to Encarnacion, but Encarnacion put a good swing on it and hit it out of the park. So we know that the home runs will be his downfall within a given start. Usually since the start
of 2017.
Yeah, he's got a ton. And he's able to, a lot of times, limit them to solo shots. But honestly, that really hasn't been the narrative with him over the last year and a half, 2 years. It used to be the solo shot. Now we're seeing anything. It doesn't matter if there's runners on bases, but he's definitely more aggressive when there's no runners on base. So I didn't think it was a terrible pitch. I thought Encarnacion just beat him on that particular ball. But when you see that that was really the only blemish of the day, I was encouraged.
And maybe Chad Green broke Encarnacion's hand later in the game to retaliate.
Yeah, that was brutal. That I actually thought it the way it sounded, which is even worse. I thought it hit the bat. Yeah. It made a loud, it made a crack noise. So
hit the joint right where the wrist and the palm meet.
Man,
that, yeah,
that's sucks. Not a good place.
But let's talk about Boone's decision to use Chad Green in that situation or bring him back out for a second inning of work, which I think is a fair second guess on Boone, on our part on Boone.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think a lot of people were talking even about Tanaka and why they brought Tanaka back out. And again, to that, I don't think there was any purpose not to bring Tanaka out. Yes, he gave up the home run, but again, I don't think it was on a terrible pitch. I thought Tanaka was pitching well. His
very
pitch count,
economical.
His pitch count was good. Low. Yeah. So and they're again, they're trying to get him back up, especially with the All-Star break. I feel like they're trying to ramp that up, and they don't really want to pull him at what was it, 60 pitches or a little bit more than that, maybe 70 pitches.
No,
at that point.
It was up in the 70s at that point. But yeah, they're trying to get the loose quote unquote pitch count on Tanaka today was 100, which yeah. I think is barely a pitch limit because
that's him
every start. You're going to take Tanaka out around 100 pitches. But right. Yeah, they wanted, especially before the All-Star break, like you said, work him up to the 100 pitches. I think he got, though, but if you're looking at the game, looking at the situation, in the fifth inning, he got he gave up a couple hard hit balls, but the shift actually saved a run on him, or maybe not saved a run, but saved a big inning, got a double play on, I think, Alonso's ball up the middle. If Didi's not shifted up the middle, that ball's up the middle and it's first and third and one out. So you look at the game and say maybe Cleveland was starting to square him up.
I guess. I don't have a problem with that. So, but the Green, the one that you were talking about, the Green situation, to me that's a situation where, you know, I don't really know why he has to come back out. And really there was it seemed like it was Green and nobody else. I mean, at that point. Green gave up a home run.
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
I don't understand that.
I don't know why you're not treating it at that given moment with the All-Star break ahead of you. Nobody has to worry about, you don't have to worry about blowing a guy out. You don't have to worry about, you know, using somebody too much. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. You pretty much have your full bullpen. It's not like anybody was really overworked. So you had guys to come in there. I don't know why it wasn't taking more of a careful approach. We saw Cleveland bring in Carrasco to come in and take care of the Yankees in the, what was it? The seventh inning, I think.
Eighth.
So the eighth, it was a moment where, you know, they basically had everybody on hand ready to go. And you know, Francona was using that to his advantage. So I don't know why Boone wasn't. I don't know why Chad Green came out. I would have, I don't think I would have sent him in, or I would have had a very, very short leash, especially after that home run. You get pulled.
Probably weren't going to use Robertson because Robertson pitched an inning and a third on Saturday night. I think Betances and Chapman both were available. They each pitched an inning. I know Holder pitched two innings on Friday night, so he had Saturday off. I feel like that you could have used Holder in that situation. I mean, at the same time, you're sitting there saying Chad Green should be good enough to get through a second inning of work, but he wasn't.
Yeah, well, the thing is once the home run is given up at that point, I mean, I'm coming somebody else, right? Like, you should be bringing somebody else back. It just goes back to Boone bringing out a guy for a second inning. And I know it wasn't a full first inning, but he does it all the time. And he does it a lot. Like, it seems like he does it almost every time, you know? Like, he's got this guy in there for two innings, and that's it. Well, I feel like we need to start looking at these an alternative plan. At least be ready for it, because if he comes out flat after sitting in the dugout and he comes out flat and he's not throwing strikes or leaves a ball up and the ball gets hammered, you know, why are we not have another guy ready to come in just in case, especially on this situation
with Chad Green? People are seeing his season, which is good, but it's not the unhittable, historically good Chad Green that we saw in 2017.
Right, and we talked about this year. We talked about this last week.
With his slider,
he's being used differently too, though. He's also being used. I mean, we had where Girardi wouldn't use him on back to back days. Now he's getting used for, two innings almost every time, and he's just, you know, there's not that consistency with Chad Green. And a lot of people would get on Girardi where like, you don't need that consistency every time. Like, can we use a guy in a different situation? Yeah, and it worked, I guess.
Yeah. All right, let's get to mailbags. If you guys want to submit mailbag questions, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. And there's a form that you can fill out. It goes to the email, and you can submit questions there. Or you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast or join the Facebook group and post questions there. It's the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. First question is from Evan Macbeth, actually in the Facebook group. Says, should we be worried about Sevy? So quickly, after the game, Luis Severino was asked, what's wrong? And he said he has no concerns. Everything was fine. But I think maybe the Yankees noticed that Severino struggled and that he struggled in his game in Toronto, too. And when you look at the pitching order coming out of the break, it's going to be Herman, Sonny Gray, and Tanaka against the Mets. And Severino's not pitching until the Rays series. So they're kind of giving him a little bit of a breather, which I think is 100% the right move.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Severino in the least bit. Not even a little bit. I think he's totally good. I think his I don't really know what we're worried about. I mean, that the fact that he had
are we worried
struggle,
that he didn't go out and shut them down for seven innings?
That's
like
the
he
thing.
Does right? Everybody else?
Yeah. If we're talking about that, then yeah, super worried about that. But the fact that he's going to come back out fully rested, ready to go for the second half, and to be our number one, our ace, our horse. I have full confidence in that. So no, I have zero worry about him. I love Severino. I love how he's really taken this entire situation of being the number one guy, and it really seems like he's embraced it. He works fast. He works confident. I love the guy. I got no qualms, no worries about it.
You ready for a hot take from my dad?
Let's hear it.
He is worried about Severino in big games, and he would rather have Sabathia on the mound in a one game wild card than Severino.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that, but I mean, I understand. I do understand the confidence in CeCe because I think a lot of people will they've seen CeCe for a long time. They know that he's kind of reinvented himself, so now he is, you know, he's still the guy that people have confidence in because he's had such success in his past, and he's such a good cerebral pitcher as well that he gets up for these moments. And I think there's, you know, they don't look at the balls that they're throwing, the fact that CeCe's will walk more guys and more of a junk ball guy and could definitely get into situations that are a lot tougher when you're looking at a one game situation, whereas Severino has the stuff that could blow people away and just end a game quickly. So,
well,
I don't know.
The season ends today. The Yankees are playing Seattle in the one game wild card. Do you throw Sabathia so you can save Severino for the Red Sox in game one?
No. No, I don't. I throw Severino. I win the game and get to the playoffs because the one game wild card is a play in, and you got to be there to
you get to raise.
I mean, I understand what it is. I know what it technically is, but I don't know any. If you think that feels like a playoff,
did 2015 feel like a playoff?
No.
Okay, what do we have next?
All right, next one is from Dylan Pimentel. He's at Dill BPTEL on Twitter, I guess. Assuming we can't get an ace, DeGrom, Thor, or Mad Bum, would anyone be worth acquiring? Hap, Hamels, Fulmer. It feels like we should get a good look at Sheffield before making a trade, don't you think? Well, first of all, let me answer the Sheffield thing is tough because one, I don't think he's really in line for if he were to come up, major work this year. You know, I think it's still a long shot for him to come up in the first place. But if he were to come up, I don't think he's in line for major work because, you know, he just hasn't thrown that. I think they're going to be more careful with him. So we certainly can't rely on a guy like Sheffield, even if he were to pitch well, as a guy that they can depend on down the stretch.
Yeah, I don't think the Yankees trading for a pitcher and Justice Sheffield getting some time, a start or two, are mutually exclusive. Like,
right.
Why can't
I
both
agree
of those
that.
Things happen?
For sure. No, they absolutely can, and they very well might.
Right. But so I think Dylan is expressing something we talked about a few minutes ago where Yankee fans are saying, if we can't get somebody to start game two of the playoffs, then what's the point? And I just think that
right.
is so wrong looking at how the second half is going to shape up and how already worked the Yankees bullpen is and how up in the air the Yankees rotation is after Luis Severino.
Yeah, no, I mean the Yankees have to start looking at these other guys, and I think as Yankee fans, for you to get your expectations in line, you should be looking around the major leagues and seeing who's going to be sellers and what their rotation looks like and who's controlled, who's not, and what we can get for these guys, because there are some, you know, wild card guys out there. There's a lot of guys that you probably haven't even heard of, but there are guys out there that are obtainable, at least on the surface looks obtainable. That could help the Yankees. They're not going to be a number one. They're not going to be a number two, but they could help.
And that's what we're going to do with answering the next few mailbag questions. But so let's check in on some of the guys Dylan mentioned. Ja Happ, last five starts entering the All-Star break, 25 and a third innings, 32 hits allowed, 20 earned runs. He gave up the grand slam heard round the world to Mookie Betts at Fenway Park in a 46-pitch inning the other night. Cole Hamels' last four starts entering the All-Star break, 17 innings pitched, 28 hits, 18 earned runs, a 995 OPS allowed, almost 1,000 OPS allowed by Cole Hamels. Michael Fulmer, last five starts, 31 innings, 36 hits, 20 runs, 19 of them earned. He gave up 10 hits in 4 2/3 innings in his last start. So, bunch of trash out there. They're going dumpster diving.
I mean, so I think a lot of these guys, the three mentioned right there, it really depends on what the package would be to get them. Because if you're looking at a guy like Ja Happ, Cole Hamels, and they're asking for significant prospects, a guy that can help your team, you know, in a year, maybe 2 years, then you really have to consider what you're going to be doing at that point. Because is it going to be worth it? Because if you start looking around the major leagues, you can get guys that are similar players to these two guys. They don't have the names of those guys, but there are similar players that I think would cost a lot less than what you're getting. Ja Happ, and not to mention Ja Happ in division, you know, there's going to be a level of premium because of that alone. So I don't know. I fully trust Cashman in the sense that he's going to look at these packages, he's going to assess them, and do a risk reward analysis and say this is worth it, this is not worth it. I can get this guy, you know, and there's going to be a marginal difference. So I think a lot of people are just out of whack with the way that they're thinking about some of these guys. And a lot of people have been talking about Ja Happ with his success against the Red Sox and success against I think Houston, because his numbers are better when you look at those two. I mean, yes, he did just give up the monster shot to Mookie Betts, but overall, I think he's had decent numbers against them.
And Happ and Hamels, I think their stock is coming down, and I don't think either of them would cost significant prospects. Fulmer, despite the fact that he struggled this season, is still team controlled for a long time.
Yeah.
So he will cost significant prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll look at, you know, the performance from when he was you know, rookie of the year type guy, not the performance right now. That'll be the sales pitch on that one. But again, that's going to be a significant prospect. So the Yankees have to be convinced not only that he's worth it, but that they're fully convinced of his health as well, because I think that's a major consideration at this point. Is he really healthy? Is he pitching at full health right now? And now the injury has affected the way he pitches, or is he still have lingering injuries, or, you know, what's going on with him? Why is he pitching this way?
And the next thing you got to do is you got to start looking around and seeing what teams you think are going to be sellers. And we were kind of doing that in our Facebook group, and some of the names that were thrown around were Danny Duffy from the Royals, Kyle Gibson from the Twins, Gio Gonzalez, because Washington has been struggling, and obviously your new binky, Matt Harvey, are all guys that Cashman's probably looking at.
Yeah, and I think he's got to look at these guys. So the names, I was looking at Danny Duffy and looking at Kyle Gibson. They're not flashy guys. Danny Duffy's definitely going to cost more money for sure, because I think he's got a couple more years left of a $15 and $16 million contract. So he would be a guy that would cost money and would be you'd have to be, you know, convinced that he's going to be part of your rotation for the next two years.
But at the same time, I mean, he might not cost a lot prospects-wise, because KC might want to just get out of that $15 million a year. Yeah, I just looked it up. He's owed
$15 and $16 million, I think.
Yep, through 2021.
But my point is that you're gonna have Danny Duffy in your rotation then for the next 2 years. So you gotta be good with that. We gotta be at a place where we're happy with that.
And do you want to be paying Danny Duffy $15 million bucks a year?
Exactly. Not, you know, once this cap resets, or the luxury tax resets, I don't think it's as big of an issue. But Kyle Gibson's another guy who I think he's a free agent after the year. I'm looking at Kyle Gibson. I kind of have him circled because he's not a flashy guy, but he's having a pretty good year as far as when you look down the line of the guys that who are obtained. He's a free agent after the year. The Twins are not in a position to do anything. They've done business with the Twins before. He's a guy that, you know, would take some a package worth that we wouldn't even know the guy's name is most likely, and could come in and contribute and keep guys in the game and pitch innings. I think he's one of those guys that I was talking about that could have some type of a role down the stretch, in the sense that he's going to be coming out every fifth day and he's going to give you an opportunity to win games.
So you're telling me you're going to have Danny Duffy start game two of the American League Division Series? You are out of your damn mind.
The other thing that I think people have to realize that I don't even know if is even crossed anybody's brain, because it's barely crossed our brains as well. It's like, I think the Yankees have to absolutely rely on the fact that Sonny Gray is going to come back. Because I'm serious. You can't
one
just,
good start going into the All-Star.
No. I'm not saying that he is. I'm not saying that he's coming back. That he's back in the sense that he's back right now. I'm saying that the Yankees almost have to rely on the fact that he will come back to semblance of himself.
That's scary.
Because if you start looking around, you know, you're taking Sonny Gray out of that rotation now too. You need more than one starter, no matter what. You just do. So I think at some point, Brian Cashman has to circle Sonny Gray and be like, look, our season is still kind of dependent on this guy coming back. Like, we need him more than ever to come back and find his stuff. It's a sad reality, but I think it's a reality. I think the Yankees absolutely need him to still be an effective pitcher.
Well, like, again, we've talked about this. It also changes the entire outlook on the rotation. If Sonny Gray is what we expected him to be, a number two starter, then that totally changes what the Yankees have to do on July 31st. They still will get a starter, but you don't need to get desperate at that point.
But that's the thing. There's no the problem with this year's trade deadline is those desperate moves. Like, who are they? I don't even know if they're available.
More questions. Maybe some of these guys are desperate.
A lot of these desperation moves are just, you know, they're not there. They're not available for the taking unless you're giving up some major assets.
Jake Housel underscore Jake on Twitter says, I love Gleyber Torres, but I would trade him for DeGrom. So, Scott, would you trade Gleyber Torres for Jacob DeGrom?
I would not trade Gleyber Torres for Jacob DeGrom.
Would you trade him for anybody?
No. No, because DeGrom would be the guy. DeGrom would be the best option.
Do you think that the Yankees in 2018 are better with Jacob DeGrom in the rotation and Brandon Drury or Tyler Wade and Neil Walker at second base, or no Jacob DeGrom and Gleyber Torres at second base?
See, that's short-sighted, though, because I'm not just thinking about 2018.
Oh, it's 1,000% short-sighted. But that is the argument that people are making out there for trading Gleyber Torres, that DeGrom gives you a better chance to win the 2018 World Series than Gleyber Torres. I get that. But Gleyber Torres is going to be here for the next 15 years, and Jacob DeGrom is not.
If you're not looking at the long term, if you're not looking beyond 2018 for what this team how this team is constructed and what they've built, I mean, do we forget we were looking at 2019 as the year that we were ready to contend. 2019 was the year that everybody had circled as that was the year ready to go. They're still ahead of schedule in the sense that they you know, got to the playoffs and made a deep run last year. Like, I think this is the year that they were trying to make it. I know it changed everything.
They went out and got Stanton, so it's no longer.
I get that, but there still has to be the thought of what's going to happen in the future. How can this be sustainable for more than 1 year? And selling a guy like Gleyber Torres while you're getting a phenomenal pitcher is just not the answer. It's just not, because there's things that can be done in free agency. There's things that can be done, you know, outside when the season is not playing, when it's not happening, where you're not in a position where you do have to give up, you know, a major asset because you're pinned against the corner at a trade deadline. It's just not the best time to make a high leverage trade like that.
What is next?
The next one is from Chocolate Thunder at Nerdy McGurdy. Vinny, sorry, I skipped you. Vinny says, I saw a story that the Angels may be willing to part with Skaggs or Heaney. I'd rather land one of these two than Happ or Hamels. Thoughts on these two? I love this. This is like in the realm of possibility here.
And people always go wild for the Yankees Angels because of Epler and the connection with Cashman.
So. I mean, it's a real thing. It's a real connection.
Sure. Skaggs, free agent, not until 2021. Heaney, 2022. They're both left-handed pitchers in their, I think, both 27 years old. Heaney had that surgery, missed a lot of 2016. But the Angels are definitely going to be, I don't know if they're going to be sellers, but they're not contenders. They're now 9 games in back of Seattle for the second wild card spot, and they are now 4th in their division. The Billy Beane Oakland Athletics are above the Angels at this point. Just when Ohtani went down, the Angels tanked.
Yeah, and they're in a weird situation too, because their roster is still ready to compete for next year as well. Like they think that they're closer than a lot of these teams that are, you know, going to be selling. So they're not going to be necessarily just selling everybody. They're not going to be a fire sale with the Angels, but one of these two guys I could see being moved. And I think this is the type of player where there's some upside, but there's also, you know, some controllability, and it's not going to cost an arm and a leg to get one of these guys. But I disagree.
You're going to be giving up a lot because they're both team controlled. And if you're the Angels, you're not going to be looking for prospects that are 5 years away. You might want to look at a prospect that is going to help you next season. You're looking at guys that you can plug into your starting lineup immediately because, like you said, they want to contend in 2019.
But I'm not saying that it's going to be, you're going to have to give up people. There's no doubt. But because they're controlled, because they will help your team into the future, you're okay with doing that at this point. Like, these guys have potential. It's not like we're trying to get a guy just for the end of this year who is a free agent and we have no control, or maybe even just 1 year. Like, these are relatively younger guys. What are they? What did we say? 27,
28 years old.
Okay. So that's a great age where you have these guys entering, you know, theoretically their prime and they're controlled. So you will give up an asset. Like, I could see a guy like Clint Frazier going in a deal like this.
But it all also matters what the Angels are looking for. Like we were saying, like they don't need really outfield help.
No, they. I don't know who they'd be asking for when we're looking at their lineup. They're pretty good in the outfield, unless right field changed. You know, they could make a move for a right fielder or shift guys around to really import and bring in a guy like Frazier. But I think Frazier's probably along the level of a guy that would be dealt. Billy McKinney, I think, is a name that nobody's really talked about, but still has some
some decent prospect status. He's
not going to be a centerpiece, but he will be a guy that could contribute.
But we're on board with somebody like those two guys being exactly what I think Cashman would love to bring back, where it helps you immediately, helps you the next 3 years.
Right, but you're not giving up a guy like Andujar. That's the for a position that he's going to be playing for a long time. Unless they just don't like him at all, which is the rumor.
No, I'm saying unless they got Manny Machado in their back pocket.
Yeah.
Which is...
I cannot wait for him to go to the National League. I really can't. It's really interesting, too, because I think if you're looking at the way that the Yankees are setting up for future years, too, and we know what's happening in left field right now, right? Brett Gardner has an option, and he's playing out of his mind right now. He's really playing well. It's going to be very difficult for the Yankees to look at that and not pick it up.
Chocolate Thunder.
And then what do you do with Frazier? Sorry.
Yeah. No, exactly. Clint Frazier, we've said this for a year now. Clint Frazier, where's the place for him?
Yeah. If Gardner is on this team next year, you can't send Clint Frazier back to AAA. You just can't do it. He's not a AAA player.
You're saying next year?
Next year, yes.
Because they just sent him back to
AAA. No, I know. I'm saying for next year. You can't bring him into another year as a AAA guy. I don't know. It just doesn't. It doesn't look right. The optics are terrible.
Yeah, and he's already a major league player, and he was a major league player this year. So, okay, Chocolate Thunder, Nerdy McGurdy on Twitter says, "I wonder if the Cardinals are sellers now. They have some good young pitching, and they fired their manager Mike Matheny." I like this little tidbit. It's the first time the Cardinals have changed managers during a season since 1995, when Joe Torre was let go and replaced by Mike Jorgensen.
I love that. It's start of the Torre era, which is ironic because Joe Girardi is talking about maybe the next St. Louis manager. I mean, he kind of fits the bill over there, right? It makes sense. Yeah. Yep. I could absolutely see that. I could absolutely see they're another one of those organizations that they don't like to fire managers. They like to keep guys for the longer term. And how long was Matheny there?
Seven
years. Okay, so you know they're definitely the type of organization that likes to keep a guy around, and I could see Girardi fitting in there nicely. Maybe he's too much like Matheny, though. Maybe that's a problem.
The Cardinals are 4 games in back of the second wild card. They've been struggling. They're hovering around 500. I think they're going to try and make a run out of the All-Star break, but if they don't, I could see them selling, especially because Waka and Wainwright are both out for at least another month. They have a ton of young pitching. I was going through
their roster. They always do. That's like one of their best attributes is starting pitching development.
They've got this kid, Luke Weaver, who they just sent back to AAA. He's thrown 103 innings for them. He's only 24. His ERA is high, but he's only 24, and he's got had last two starts have been good. We know about Carlos Martinez. He's locked up to 2023. Jake Flaherty and John Gant, they've been using Gant as a swingman, and Flaherty has a 3.24 ERA. Those guys are both pre-arbitration. These guys are young as shit.
Yeah. Who's your boy now? Bring out your unicorn.
Miles Mikolas. I love this guy. Did some digging on him. Listen to this. You're going to fall in love with him too. So he's back after pitching in Japan for two seasons. He's thrown 115 innings to a 2.65 ERA. He is an all-star this season. He looks like, go look at his picture right now. I tweeted
it out. I saw it. I saw the picture.
He looks like every white dad from 1987.
He's Magnum
P.I. He's got a mullet. He's got the porn stash. It is fantastic. And his nickname is the Lizard King. This guy needs to be on the New York Yankees.
Well, you know, the stash, well, he can keep the stash, actually.
Oh, you can keep the
mullet.
Stash.
The mullet.
Might have to trim up that mullet. Just look at Donnie Baseball in the late 80s. You can do it a little bit. Just model him after that.
The Lizard King. You know, these guys are interesting. The ones that go overseas and, you know, kind of find themselves later in their days and then have a resurgence and come back and have some success.
Just eating a bunch of sushi over there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do have a lot of, you have these late bloomers that can develop. But a guy like that is, I mean, when you're looking at a trade and you're looking at capturing lightning in a bottle type of situation where, you know, he's controlled to for the contract.
It's interesting because
you were talking about the arbitration.
Yeah, so it's very interesting because you look and he signed a two-year contract worth $15.5 million.
Great contract.
But he still could go through arbitration even though he's 29 years old. Now, a lot of times what teams do is because they don't want to put a 31-year-old or a 30-year-old through arbitration, that's kind of mean, especially if a guy's pitching to a 2.65 ERA, they'll non-tender him a contract or work something out. But that doesn't that means Mikolas has no leverage, and St. Louis has all the leverage here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it sounds like, you know, that's beyond the 2-year control. I mean, theoretically, you could think of that as a you know, at least 3-year control guy who's 29 years old, who's a rookie hitting his prime right now. So, I mean, that's an attractive player when you're seeing all of that and you see the numbers that he's putting up. So, yeah, I you know, it'll be interesting to see how the St. Louis Cardinals approach the deadline because. You know, we saw how the Twins made, you know, they were selling assets and then all of a sudden, you know, they're bringing people in because they lost six games and now they're back in it. And, maybe they won't sell too early. So they could be, you know, if they're struggling, in the last week or the, you know, last 3-4 days up leading up to the deadline, they might be contenders at that point to sell off. So that might push things back as far as other deals going on as well. If they're not like declared as sellers yet.
Yeah, and I don't think the Cardinals trading him would be breaking it down and rebuilding. That is just a minor retool where they could still compete next year. They have starting pitching. Also, I'm drawing a blank on it. Alex Reyes, right?
Yes.
He's injured as well. So they've got so much young pitching where if they could get a Clint Frazier ready player. I don't know if that's too much for this guy.
I was going to say, now you're giving up Frazier for some guy that just came back from Japan, the Lizard King?
Exactly. I don't know. But I think that is how you convince the Cardinals to give him up, is here's a player you can plug in now, and we get a pitcher who is really hot right now, and we have a little bit of control over.
Billy McKinney feels like a better player for that trade.
Well, it's going to cost more than that.
I'm saying, but I could see him going in there, contributing. He feels like a St. Louis Cardinal type of player, too. I could see him, you know, moving around.
Billy McKinney goes to the Cardinals, has a 12-year career, you know, hits .278, really good on base percentage. He's loved, and he's the Cardinal way.
Here we go. I got a conspiracy theory that I just thought of. All right, so Mike Matheny is out as manager. Joe Girardi gets hired as manager pre-trade deadline. Now Girardi has influence and knows the Yankees system, knows Billy McKinney, loves the kid, good Christian kid, loves all these things like the, you know, all the things that Girardi loves about him, and has insight on a couple of these guys that are in low A that he in particular has, you know, affectionate and loves as long-term options. Could see that done.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. Just give me the Lizard King.
Just not for Red Thunder.
What's the last question?
Next is from Mike Azzaro. Now that Boone has managed a full half season, what do you think of the job he's done? What would you grade him so far? And any comparisons to Joe Girardi?
zero comparisons to Joe Girardi, but many comparisons, as we've highlighted over the first half, to Joe Torre.
Yeah, no, I think he's, you know, I think Boone has very much carved himself into his own guy. I think we're seeing, I think optically, like when we're looking at the two of them, and he does some of those Boone, and he was doing those Torre things early on. I haven't really seen it as much lately, honestly.
But he also, a lot of the comments he has post game, I think, are more Joe Torre esque than Joe Girardi esque.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that. Let me just cut to the chase and get to the grade. I'm giving him a solid B for what he's done, maybe even a B+.
Yeah, I'd say B is a little low,
because I think that there's a lot of things that he's had to figure out as the time has gone on in the first half. And yes, he was given a very talented team, and a lot of them did the work for him. Like, there's not really much you have to do with that lineup. These guys will pretty much take care of it. But I think he's also shown how he manages his bullpen, and it's very different than Joe Girardi. And we've, you know, gone through ups and downs with that, where he's in the beginning of the season had maybe a lot of confidence in a guy like Holder, where we all were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And then we come back and we see, well, maybe that paid off, because now Holder is a key asset in this bullpen. We saw today with Chad Green leaving him in a little too long. He's definitely a longer guy with some of his bullpen guys. That being said, I like what he's done. I like the fact that there is some a different level of aggressiveness. There were a lot of people talking about this. Thursday night where Judge got caught stealing. Was it Thursday night?
No, that was Friday night.
Friday night.
Judge got caught stealing in the eighth inning. Yeah. He sent him, and you had Didi up, and Stanton was coming up after.
Right.
That.
So it was what I'm thinking of was Thursday night when Aaron Hicks hit that ball over the center fielder's head. And I think Didi was on base. Didi was running on the pitch, scored from first base. Everybody was like, wow, great play. Didi scored. Awesome play. Phenomenal. If Aaron Judge is safe at second base, nobody's talking about that. They're like, wow, good aggressive play. At the same tone, everybody's complaining about the Yankees are too dependent on the long ball. Yet this guy goes out there and tries to do some aggressive plays. We're getting a guy running a little bit of a hit and run. I like that. I like him being aggressive, especially in situations where you're not expecting it. They saw something in the delivery and they thought they could steal a bag. And unfortunately, there was a great throw and a great tag, and he was out by a hair. It happens. You're going to get them. The call's not going to go your way sometimes. But I think the situation in doing that, I like the aggressiveness. So I think there's things like that people are killing him for. Whereas if they had worked out literally like a hair different, they would have been praising him for aggressiveness. And if Stanton goes up there and hits a ground ball in the hole and Judge scores from second, Aaron Boone is a totally different guy than he was because Stanton hit the home run the next inning. You know what I mean? But that's the thing. It's all Monday morning quarterback
stuff.
That's
manager second-guessing 101.
I get it.
That's just how it goes. That's the job you sign up for.
And part of my grading, though, is the fact that I like that aggressiveness. I like the fact that he would send a guy that because he sees something and take a bit of a gamble and not just rely on the ball leaving the ballpark to score that run. And I like that. I think that's a good thing. And I think it's a good way to show confidence in your guys and to tell them, hey, we're not only going to score with the home run ball. We're going to be aggressive on the base
They're
going
to also score with the Little League home run ball.
Yeah. So, you know, I like that mindset. And I think he does. I think he brings a different mindset to this team. And I think the team really likes Aaron Boone. So I'm changing my grade. It's definitely a B+.
Yeah, I would say it's a B+, borderline A-. They're 29 games over 500. I understand they're 4.5 back, but I do think that the team has responded to Boone. And that was probably the biggest question, right? Like all this other baseball stuff, he obviously has been in baseball his entire life, and you learn on the job. He made some mistakes in the beginning, which we crushed him for, and he's evolved. But the biggest question is, how is the team going to play for and respond to Boone? And I don't think you could argue they're responding to him. They're a really good team. So
I kind of disagree with that, though, because I think that's why he was brought in here, because of the way that he manages.
Yes, but you don't know until it's out there. You don't know how things are going to.
I guess it was. I thought for sure, like, because of the way he is, the way that he's a younger guy, like he's already, you know, he can relate to these guys a lot more than a Joe Girardi type. So I didn't think the relationships with the players was ever going to be a problem. Like, I thought that was going to be the one thing that he was going to be able to lean back on. I think the baseball was really the big question mark, because he's never done it before.
He's never done it before, but it's also something you can get better at. It's really hard to get better at being a people person.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. But we knew he was a people person. Ask Joe Girardi. It's hard to improve those things. you stick your foot in your mouth quite a bit. But yeah, the relationships, you know, I don't know. That's just one of those things where I think he comes into it being an ESPN personality beforehand, doing the imitations. Like, you knew it was going to be a loose clubhouse.
Right. Well, good batch of mailbag questions. As something tells me we're not done with the trade talk mailbag questions. That's all right. We got a couple more weeks of it. It's the All-Star break now, so a few days off. We will have a Thursday episode, talk about the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby, any other roster decisions, roster moves that happen. And we will also be giving out mid-season awards on that show. So definitely looking forward to that. Scott, any last words before we get out of here?
No, I just hope everybody enjoys the little break from the grind of watching baseball every night. Now it's a exhibition, a little bit more fun. We don't have as many guys on, because Chapman's not pitching.
Chapman got pulled from the All-Star.
Severino will probably be throwing.
Severino, I think, is going to get in. Obviously, Judge is starting, but that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I wonder if Severino can get the nod. That'll be the big question mark.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they go with Hinch goes with his guy.
I hope so. I'm kind of good with that.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Hey, Ken Swipers, this is Eric from Syracuse on another brutal loss to a Chump team. And this isn't necessarily a boo and criticism, because this goes back through Girardi, back to the Torrey days. Why they refuse to just walk guys who routinely own them, like David Ortiz and Evan Longoria, and now Manny Machado. Just give up the base, pitch to the next dude. Jesus. So stubborn, they just don't understand that. They kind of like got it in the ninth inning, but then it's too late, they already tied the game. But anyway, while the Yankees are losing to these chump teams like the Orioles, the Red Sox have won 8 in a row against mostly chump teams, so they have no problem taking care of business again. So all I gotta say about that is, wild card, bitches! Yeehaw!
Sonny Gray is a bomb, but he's doing good.
Fly, bird, fly.
Woo! You know what the Yankees need to do after this series? They need to keep Wade, and they need to DFA Walker, because he is the most useless person on defense. Like, when Glaber comes back, give him Walker's spot, but keep Wade. And Guardy, you're the man.
Why is Chad Green still in this ball game? Pull this dude, man. What the fuck? Come on, Boone. You're fucking up, man. I've liked you this entire season so far. You're fucking up this game. Let's go.
Hi, it's Eric from Rockville. Like the job Boone's doing, but he cost 3 games this past week. First 2 against the Orioles by leaving the starter too long and Green in 1 inning too long. And then Sunday leaving Green in again 1 inning too long. That has to improve.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.